Hey, welcome to the Energy Question with David Blackman. I'm your host, David Blackman, and my very special guest today is Genevieve Collins, who is the State Director for Americans for Prosperity, Texas Division. Genevieve, how are you today?
Hey, David. I'm doing great. Thank you for having me.
Well, thank you so much for doing this. We were talking, just so everyone knows, before we started recording, about the fact that Genevieve ran for Congress in 2020 in the district where I live. And I was happy to vote for her. Unfortunately, she didn't prevail in that election. But she would have been a terrific representative for Texas in Congress. But now she's doing work on behalf of AFP Texas. And do you find that this work to maybe be preferable to being an elected official in Washington, D.C.?
Absolutely. As I talked to you previously, I'm a doer, and life is so much more fun when you can actually see the things that you want to have come to fruition, the things that you want to see done, get done, and not just kind of wait around for 434 other people to join you. So I am loving being at AFP. And to be honest, I got to AFP because they endorsed my campaign.
Yeah.
And I thought, there's all these specialists in the political world when you're running for office. You've got all of your social organizations and you're trying to earn their endorsement. And those social organizations are great and they're specialists. But I thought, who's going to be there for the taxpayer? Everyone's a taxpayer and everyone should be talking about monetary, fiscal, and tax policy because that affects all of us. And right. AFP was the only organization that had a longstanding record of showing up for taxpayers. And I thought, that's the wagon I want to hitch to. And it's been a lot of fun. I clearly sound like a huge nerd now, which I am, but.
Me too.
Yeah.
Americans for Prosperity, if I remember right, wasn't it begun back in the 80s or even earlier than that?
Well, it's gone through multiple iterations really kind of started to take off during the Tea Party movement back in 2010 or 2009. I think it started as Freedom Works and then through that movement and then has evolved now into, a national organization that both works at the state and at the federal level.
Well, it's becoming a big organization in Texas. You were telling me before we started our interview that you've really grown the group here in the last couple of years since you came on board.
Yeah, I've been at the helm of Americans for Prosperity for 2 years. I started the day for all of the people that watch will watch this. I started the day of Snowpocalypse in 2021. So imagine that's your first day and you can't even get a hold of anyone because no one has power. So that was a wild experience. But I started with 7 employees in 4 cities. And now I've got 32 full-time staff across 13 cities in Texas. And we are the largest nonpartisan policy and grassroots organization in the state of Texas. And we're in small markets, we're in big markets. And our sole goal is to make sure that we educate, we engage, and we activate people on the issues. And it's so refreshing to be a part of an issue-centric organization, even though, it seems kind of boring to most people, but issues really are what bind us all together and can facilitate a conversation, can work to bridge divides versus talking just about a candidate or a member. We can actually talk about issues and get work done.
Well, it's not boring to me. My audience knows that I'm a public policy nerd nut and have obsessed about it every day. And, and of course, the legislature's in session now. I lobbied in Austin for 15 years so I'm always excited about what's happening in Austin. I'm very interested. And you guys have are working on an array of issues down there right now. Talk about the agenda you guys have going.
So we have a very robust agenda. At this exact moment, I'm thinking to myself, did we bite off more than we could chew? But, what we're really focused on is 5 main issue areas. healthcare reform, education reform, housing reform, property tax reform, and criminal justice reform. And so those are the kind of five buckets. And then within each of those, we break those down to really create more opportunity for more folks.
Well, for the energy business, which we focus on here, there's two of those categories. Well, they're all important, but the two that really stand out, of course, having been in the industry for so long, are property taxes. And we have this enormous budget surplus that they're trying to figure out how to give some of it back to taxpayers. Right. And then, of course, education reform, which is vitally important to the whole business community. Let's start by talking about your advocacy on property taxes first. What is your position on all that?
Well, first off, because I have 13 offices across the state of Texas and over 250,000 activists and a huge volunteer base, I hear from everybody, despite any race or creed, everyone thinks that they pay too much in property taxes. And I think that that's fundamentally true. This is a human issue, not a partisan issue. And so what we're really focused on, and I will say Americans for Prosperity, we've been in Texas for 10 years, and this has kind of been AFB's bread and butter for probably the last three sessions. So that's 6 years. And what we're really focused on is how do we make property tax reform lasting? You know, there's two separate proposals in the House and the Senate, and they're divergent. And it looks like these guys are fixing to go into battle and have a big fight between the House and the Senate about their different approaches and their different definitions of lasting property tax reform. Right. We're kind of best case scenario. They get their heads together and they say, we're going to increase the homestead exemption. We're going to decrease appraisal caps. We're going to compress all of the spending at the property tax, you know, school maintenance, school and operations fund, and we can do an all of the above solution. I'm not sure that that's going to happen. That is absolute ideal best case scenario. But I think as Texas gets, you know, 1,000 new people a day, we have to take property tax reform and relief really serious. So we're not taking people out of their homes, taxing people out of their homes.
Yeah, you know, and it's also important to everybody in Texas. I was watching the news last night. I live in Fort Worth or just south of it. And they're talking about the Tarrant County appraisals going up 18% this year on average. 18% in 1 year.
And I mean, you're tripling inflation.
Right.
Which is saying something.
Yeah, it is. It's just nuts. And people can't afford that. You know, there's a lot of people living on fixed incomes who just can't tolerate that kind of an increase in their tax bill. And so I'm really glad to see y'all are focused on that. I know the lieutenant governor has his bill already through the Senate, and the House is working on their bill, which focuses on lowering the appraisal caps. Hopefully there is a compromise in there, because it's really important. When you look at the oil and gas business that I was in, we're one of two states in the whole country that allows property taxes to be assessed not just on your physical property,
your
but also on the value of the reserves in the ground. And people don't know it, but the average barrel of oil that's produced in Texas, you pay taxes on the average barrel three times before you ever get it up out of the ground. And it's a big thing. And then on education, you guys, I know, are really focused on the charter school issue, correct?
We're focused on charter schools and making sure that charter schools aren't discriminated against in their application process. It's kind of a nuance, but the bigger fight for us is really about school choice and leveraging education savings accounts.
Yeah, and school choice is such a controversial issue. Why do you think that issue is such a point of controversy? When I look at it, just, and I don't have a dog in the fight anymore. I'm old and already raised my kids, but it just seems like a no-brainer to me for everyone.
I agree. I mean, there's so many complexities in the education space. And prior to running for office, I spent 12 years helping build my family company, which is in the education technology space. So I have a firsthand look at working with teachers, administrators, superintendents, students. So I've had this kind of background where, you know, for example, I worked in Memphis, and for 8 years, I worked with Memphis schools, and I had teachers tell me that these poor Black kids cannot learn. And I was like, I'm sorry, what?
Which is nonsense. That is, yeah.
It's fundamentally incorrect. And every child deserves to have a world-class education. And it should be, regardless of the walls within which you are in, you should be able to have access to a world-class education, escape generational poverty, but also be a productive citizen as you continue to age. We want to have an educated and innovative workforce. If we keep kids stuck in failing schools, how are we creating a better and brighter future for the next generation? And so I think, from what I can tell, because I've sat in all these very long hearings, and I've been testifying in them, so you know what I'm talking about. I mean, you're stuck there for a long time. But, you know, the argument is that having an education savings account would defund public schools. Well, that's factually incorrect. No part of the $84 billion K-12 education budget is actually touched by the proposal for education savings accounts. And education savings accounts are essentially a financial tool that will allow parents to direct the money for where they want their kids to be going to school. They're not getting a check, but they're going to be able to direct $8,000 to $10,000 on where they want their kid to go to school. That could be a public school, that could be a private school, charter school, homeschool, micro school, you name it. And I think that there's this fear that if you pass school choice, all of a sudden you're defunding public schools, which is incorrect. You're quitting, you're turning the Friday night lights off, which is also factually incorrect.
Yeah.
And you're not supporting teachers. Well, I would say, you know, we've been talking about this a lot here in Austin. And I would say, I wanted to say this directly to one of the state reps that represents Houston ISD. I said, do you really think that it's fair for your kids, your students, to be stuck in failing public schools that now the state has had to take over? Do you think that your kids are better off than giving their parents, they're screaming for an option, any other option than having to send their kids to the same failing public schools? And this is not a war on public school. This is, how do we actually make kids have, how do we allow kids to have a brighter future? And how do we help them learn when so many of them are reading below grade level, doing math way below grade level? How do we actually change the situation and flip the script?
And the Houston public schools are such a great example. I mean, when I was in school in the 70s, the Houston public schools were a massive failure. They've been a failure for four or five generations of children. And
it's acceptable, apparently.
Yeah, and people act like there's no alternative to that.
Right.
You know, and Randy Weingarten and her union, to me, is really the most counterproductive force in the whole education debate. How do we fight all the rank disinformation and propaganda that comes out of that group and others like them with these claims that school choice somehow is destroying the public schools, which it just, it's not true. And it's one of my great frustrations that we just can never seem to get past the propaganda to the real nub of the issue.
If I had the answer to that question, we would have passed school choice already, but you're right. I mean,
well, but your group is so vital. What you're doing, I think, is really a vital part of that. You know, overcoming that disinformation that's in the debate.
Well, it is. Well, thank you. I mean, last week here in Austin, we had the first time, or the House Public Education Committee had a hearing on school choice. This is the first time in my lifetime that has happened. We've actually gotten a hearing. I'm almost 37 years old. So What was really cool is there were 175 folks that that said that they wanted to testify. The majority of them were testifying in support of school choice. The rest were obviously against. But what was really cool is that our organization, Americans for Prosperity, I also run a sister organization called the Libre Initiative, which is focused on Hispanic engagement across Texas. We brought 40 parents from all over the state. And at one point we had a gal from Grand Prairie, that's in between Dallas and Fort Worth, a gal from Grand Prairie. She had just become a United States citizen a year ago. And she was so nervous. She was like, I didn't even know I could come. Well, all of these people said, I didn't even know I could come up here and testify or tell my story. But she was so nervous that she testified in Spanish. And it was such a cool moment because we had a translator there for her. And she was so nervous, but she was so convicted because growing up in Mexico, they never had any choice. They were told exactly what they were going to do, how they were right. going to do it. And she wanted a better future for her kids and had gone through the immigration process, had become an American citizen, and wanted to fight for her kids' future. And it was such a powerful moment, David. And watching all of the members on the diocese be like, yeah, you're breaking your, their jaws were dropped. I mean, you're shattering their notion of minorities wanting school choice. And it was just a really cool moment.
You know, that's such a great point you bring up, but people don't know how easy it is for literally any citizen of Texas to testify at a legislative hearing. All you have to do is show up. Fill out a little card, say you want to testify, and that hearing is going to last until everybody who has signed up and said they want to testify has been allowed and given time to testify. That's how our public meetings, open meetings law works.
Yeah.
And I've sat through sessions that went to 4 o'clock in the morning because you had right. so many people who wanted to come, you know, offer testimony. So it's really the easiest thing in the world, and it's your right to be heard. So take advantage exactly. of it. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. I like to say that we just provide people the platform and hand them the microphone. You know, that AFP can help them find their voice and why their voice is a contribution to the issue. Because so many people feel like they have to be invited to talk about the issue before they can actually go in and talk about it. And we try to refute that and say, no, your voice already matters. Let us just hand you the microphone.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, that's a beautiful thing. It's a beautiful part of our society that so many people don't know about. It's really disturbing.
Yeah.
Anyway. No, our audience knows, right? So good.
Well, they do testify. Now.
Go down to Austin and let them
y'all
know.
Come down and join me. Y'all look me up on Twitter, G Collins. Texas.
By the way, let's just do this now. I was going to stop, but yeah, tell people how they can get in touch with y'all and get involved before we go to the El Paso issue.
Sure. So you can follow us on Twitter. We have a very active Twitter feed. I'm personally very active as well. So our Twitter feed is Texas AFP. That's Americans for Prosperity, Texas at Texas AFP. Mine is at G Collins, CollinsTX. You can find us there or our website, www.americansforprosperity.org.
Fantastic. Well, we're going to leave Austin now and go to El Paso.
Good.
Because I know you guys are very active in opposing this crazy Proposition K in El Paso that's on the ballot right now. Talk about what's happening there so that people understand the pernicious things that are going on in our cities.
Yeah, Proposition K is started out as a grassroots movement, and it has three unique attributes. It's stated that it wants to, one, reduce the city's climate contribution, two, invest in environmentally sustainable future, and three, advance the cause of climate justice. Well, I'm not sure what climate justice is, but
I was going to ask you.
But apparently that's a thing now.
No, that's a thing. Okay.
Yeah. But the reality is that this is a local government overstepping the state government's regulations. And it is putting on the ballot that they collected 25,000 signatures across the city of El Paso. And we're able to get this as a ballot measure that would basically absolutely bankrupt the city of El Paso. Sure. It would force El Pasoans, who their median income is about $56,000. It would, over the course of 8 years, I think it's 7 years, it would tax El Pasoans $38,000. They want to buy the entire El Paso electric grid, basically take us from a decentralized energy source or energy grid to a regulated one that the city would regulate, which, you know, they're incredibly good at managing money in El Paso since they've passed over $800 million of debt, certificates of obligation, which is non-voter approved debt. So if you can't tell by my tone of voice, I am kidding that El Paso is good at this. But more importantly, it would create a precedent across the state of Texas that would say that we have to be completely and 100% energy, clean energy by 2035 and or 2045. And to be honest, our energy profile at AFP, we believe in kind of an all of the above solution for energy. We should have oil. We should have natural gas. It's cheap, clean, and domestic. We should have renewables. We should have Bitcoin mining. We should have as many energy options as possible, because when Texas is energy dominant, America is energy abundant, and that helps everybody. But El Paso is trying to make this whole argument about having a clean energy, green city, and doing it in a city that can afford it the least.
Right. Yeah. And you know, to me, this effort is really a can of worms that is just kind of a pretext for using the climate debate to start implementing a more socialist agenda overall and increase local government control of people's lives. And it's just, you know, it's happened in other cities around the country, hasn't it? And they haven't had the best results so far, have they?
No, absolutely not. I mean, local governments, by and large, they are some of the biggest spenders that there are across the country. And they have very little accountability for it. And they just keep spending and trying to claw more power. And they're ending up bankrupting their cities. And you know what happens? Jobs move out. The El Paso Chamber did a study, and they estimated 170,000 jobs would cease to exist in El Paso. El Paso is the only city in Texas that has a decreasing population. Yeah. They will have people flood out of there. And, you know, this is just not what Texas needs. We need to showcase across the state that Texas energy works and that we want clean energy, but we also want to use all of our energy resources that are available to us.
So is that going to be, when does Proposition K come up for a vote?
We are asking people to vote no on May 6th. Early voting starts on Monday, the 24th, and the official election will be on May 6th.
Okay. Well, you live in El Paso, folks. Now's your chance to kill that thing, because it's going to be a nightmare for you if it passes.
Indeed.
Well, I want to tell you, I really have enjoyed this conversation. We're kind of running up against time now, as always happens to us on this show, too fast. I really appreciate you taking the time to talk to us. Yeah, me too. And let's be sure and cycle back whenever there's something, anytime I can do anything for you, have you back on to talk about a specific issue, just let me know. And we'll be glad to do it. This has been terrific.
I've so enjoyed it. And I will plan on being back. More importantly, thank you for your time, and to all of your listeners, thank you.
Thank you. And thanks to the Sandstone Group for hosting our show, and to our extraordinary producer, Eric Perel. I'm David Blackman, and that's all for now.